Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hooray for Hollywood. That phony super coney Hollywood. They come from Chillicothe and Paducah.
Doris Day came to Hollywood, got her name in lights, but was much more than the girl next door. Welcome to Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Busy show today. We reconsider the career of Doris Day and hear from cellist Maya Beiser and Carter Burwell, the composer behind two of the fall's biggest films. But we begin with Doris Day, one of America's biggest box office stars. She made 39 movies and recorded more than 650 songs. But behind the perky girl-next-door image was a troubled personal life tormented by breakdowns, failed marriages, and financial ruin. At age 87, she's been long retired and is notoriously press-shy, but there's been a resurgence of interest in her career, sparked in large part by our first two guests. Nellie Mackay is known for three albums of original genre-crossing songs, but her latest CD is something different. Normal as Blueberry Pie is a tribute to Doris Day, and Nellie will perform for us in just a bit. Also joining us is David Kaufman. He's a theater critic and author of the 2008 book, Doris Day, The Untold Story of the Girl Next Door. David, let me start with you. Many people, of course, still see Doris Day as this iconic image of, you know, the wholesome middle America, you know, Norman Rockwell vision of what an American woman should be. Is it time to reconsider that image?
It depends in what respect. I mean, I think that that image is going to stick to Doris in perpetuity for a long, long time. But if you're talking about the real Doris Day, it's a very different story. It's in many respects the opposite. But, you know, I worked on this biography for 8 years, and the most fascinating thing I learned, she is riddled with contradictions. Her personal life is, and herself is just riddled with so many contradictions.
For example,
well, her image is so not only the girl next door, but so happy. She represented our country to the rest of the world in the 1950s and 60s. And that was kind of the image that we had, I think. And, you know, one of the things about looking back, one of the reasons I think there's such a resurgent interest in her is because the last decade has not been a happy time for this country. And I think a lot of people are looking back at her story now, and they're also realizing that underneath the surface of what was happening in the 50s, and in her life, so many other things were going on.
So she's the emblem of what we now look back on as the good old days.
In
many
respects.
But she's also kind of a cautionary tale of, you know, what was churning beneath the surface.
Exactly. That's one aspect of her story.
Okay. Nellie, as a 20-something singer-songwriter yourself, Doris Day is, you know, I mean, she's ancient history for you. How did you come to know her work and to get so into it to create a whole album of her songs?
Oh, well, I guess it's all about denial. You know, she's been such a part of my contemporary life, much more than my contemporaries.
How so?
Well, you know, it's just like, for instance, that song "Hooray for Hollywood." It gives you chills. You know, that's what life can be. Who knows if you actually want it to be? But maybe you don't. You know, just that bouncing good cheer and that you know, I just think her voice speaks of possibilities.
Is that what first attracted you? Was the voice, as opposed to all the packaging that went around it?
Oh, no, I loved the packaging. I think it was the packaging that made me pick up the first record. It was actually her Warner Brothers look, which I think she didn't like very much, because they covered up her freckles and they lacquered her hair. But, you know, that's always been my
And that, David, that is a big thing, the image, that look that Nellie is talking about. I mean, she came from the era of Jean Harlow, Mae West, Betty Grable. I mean, came from that
a little
kind of
bit
tradition.
Later, yeah. A little bit later, but her third and most significant husband, Marty Melcher, was also her manager. And he very much colluded with Warner Brothers in manufacturing that image and then in maintaining it. And the really interesting thing about the image is that Doris herself, in her memoir, which was published in the mid-70s, claimed that she never understood where that image came from. But what I discovered in my research is that throughout the 50s and 60s, she was telling interviewers that she had to maintain that image because whenever she in any way departed from it, she was disappointing her fans. And that's another huge part of the story, is the degree to which she cultivated her fans, and to a lesser degree now, certainly, but she still, as of last year anyway, was receiving 500 to 600 letters a week, is what I was told.
Does she answer them? Were you told that?
She still answered quite a bit, but I think that in the last year or so, it's kind of, you know, I have to say that Doris knew about my book for the last 3 years I was working on it, and she put up no obstacles or barriers to the many people I interviewed. But she has not been happy since my book came out. There have been 5 Globe cover stories since my book came out, and recent paparazzi photos. She's been very unhappy about all of that.
About the renewed interest in
about all of this unwanted and, attention, and those photos especially. Yes, that has been very dismaying to her. She has not read my book.
So these are photos of her now in
a couple years ago. Yeah.
All right. So still,
and they've been in the grocery store tabloids. You know, it's been very upsetting to her.
So now in her late 80s, she thought she was past the stage where she had to avoid the paparazzi.
When she moved to Carmel in 1980-81, she really put her past behind her, and she has not been happy to have it so revived and resurrected.
Okay, so are you saying? I just want to follow up on 2 things you said. The first of them, that she didn't quite understand what this image meant, but she was willing to go with it for the sake of her fans?
Well, that speaks to what I was saying earlier about how she's so full of contradiction. She says different things at different points in her life. And I think that that's true of all of us. You know, I think we all have contradictions in our lives. But the point to Doris Day is, because she was such an icon, her life was so scrutinized. It's almost like royal. It is. It's American royalty. So in a sense, she was living her life quite publicly.
And then the follow-up question, and a related one, is you said it, when she did depart from that image, she felt like she was failing her fans. That didn't stop her from departing from that image now and again. And there was this this movie where she plays the torch singer Ruth Etting.
Yes, Love Me or Leave Me, which many people, including myself, consider to be Doris Day's best performance in her best film. And that
What makes this her best?
Well, it's actually one of the first films she makes when she leaves Warner Brothers. Her first 17 pictures were made under contract to Warners. And Marty Melcher at that point wanted to show the world that his wife was really different from that image that they had up until that point. And Doris embraced that because she wanted the world to see that she could be a really serious actor. She wanted to be taken seriously as an actress. And she gives a fantastic performance. It's and so does James Cagney, who plays in it with her. And she's a very sexy figure in that picture.
This is the 1955 movie Love Me or Leave Me. The song is called Mean to Me.
You're mean to me. Why must you be mean? Gee, honey, it seems to me you love to see me crying. I don't know why I stay home each night when you say you'll phone. You don't, and I'm singing the blues and sighing. You treat me coldly,
song is called Mean to Me. Doris Day in the 1955 movie Love Me or Leave Me, a somewhat uncharacteristic performance, not the goody, you know, lacquered image of Warner Brothers, but playing the role of Ruth Edding. And David Kaufman, author of Doris Day, The Untold Story of the Girl Next Door, there is just layer upon layer of irony and strange parallels here.
Yeah, Doris was very aware when she was making this picture that Ruth Edding herself was married to her manager and that it was also an unhappy marriage. And in fact, I think it's the year that Doris makes Love Me or Leave Me that Marty Melcher, who had been her husband already for 5 years, he had a contract drawn up between the artist, Doris Day, and the manager, Marty Melcher. I think this might be prenuptial agreements are quite common, but I think this might be the first, if not the last, postnuptial agreement. And I think it's because Melcher was realizing how unhappy Doris was with the marriage at that point. So it was really to protect himself.
And he protected himself to the tune of some $22.8 million by the time all was said and done.
Well, but that's a whole other story because it's really his partner, Rosenthal, a lawyer, who he's the one who made off with all the money. Whether he lost it or stole it, nobody really knows for sure. But that became the biggest court case, civil court case in California history. When Doris, after Melcher died, she sued Rosenthal, and she won a settlement for $23.7 million, which in...
Was she ever able to collect it?
Her fourth husband, another scoundrel, he settled with the insurance company for $6 million, but he was a friend of Rosenthal's, so that story gets really complicated.
Man. All right, there's so many threads to pick up here. Yeah, Nellie MacKay, I mean, you know, you put together this whole album as a tribute to Doris Day. Did you know any of this backstory?
Well, certainly. I read her autobiography in high school, so... So I have her autobiography memorized better than most of my lyrics.
the album is called Normal as Blueberry Pie. Is that an ironic title?
Yeah, because, you know, she's considered the face of normality. And, of course, as David is saying, beneath the surface, there was all kinds of turmoil. And what does constitute normal? Why do people have that reaction to Doris Day? You know, people, they tend to have a strong reaction to the name. And but even within that reaction, there are other feelings. You know, people who think, you know, they're too hip, you know. But a lot of times they grew up with her and they're confused. She really provokes something in people.
Well, as David and I were discussing just before we went on the air, I mean, I was a little kid, you know, when Doris Day was sort of in the waning years of her pop stardom. For me, the name Doris Day didn't mean a person; it meant a thing. You know, it was like it was a gestalt. I don't know. It was something. It was.
Well, that goes along with being an icon. I think that's true. It's she was an icon,
and she meant something other than a woman with a nice voice and good hair.
But in terms of normalcy, if I could interject, Tracy Letts, the playwright of August Osage County and now of Superior Donuts on Broadway, one of his early best plays was called Killer Joe, and that play has a line in it which is one of my favorite lines, which is, "Normal people are people you don't know very well."
Well said. So, Nellie, most of your album, Normal as Blueberry Pie, consists of your arrangements of songs that Doris Day made famous, had hits with, some of the more obscure ones. But the one you're going to play for us, this is an original song?
It is, yes. It's one I wrote in high school when I was listening to Miss Day.
So it's sort of an homage to her.
And to animals, to animal rights, because it's about them. They're the focus of the song.
Okay, and as we can discuss in a little bit, that remains a key part of Doris Day's life. But you want to play it for us? Nellie MacKay making her way to the piano. The album's called Normal as Blueberry Pie. And Nellie will actually be doing a program, a kind of tribute program to Doris Day, at Jazz at Lincoln Center in the Allen Room. It's a bit off. You'd have to mark your calendars. February 18th at 8:30 p.m. But here she is now, live in our soundcheck studio with a song called If I Ever Had a Dream.
If
If I ever had a dream, I would dream of sunny skies of blue, clover neath the fields of cream, bougainvillea and the roses too. The wind is a symphony flowing low across the silver sea, tails sway on a summer breeze, twinkling shadows form a canopy. No arms to hold you down, your own dear nature will see you through. If I ever had a dream, it would be for you. If I ever had a wish, butterflies and bumblebees at play, purple moonbeams on the mist, crowds of callow lilies show the way, bush bramble and burbling streams gurgling gently down a birth of green. How mirthful a melody, sunlight playing on the waters gleam. Somewhere the heart can roam, far from the damage that some can do. If I ever had a dream, it would be for you.
Well, that sounds like something Doris Day might have recorded all those years ago. In fact, it's an original song by Nellie Mackay, playing live at our piano, If I Ever Had a Dream. It's on her new album called Normal as Blueberry Pie, a tribute to Doris Day. Also with us is David Kaufman, who's written the biography, Doris Day, The Untold Story of the Girl Next Door. And in a moment, we'll continue our discussion of Doris Day, her involvement with animal rights, among other things. And in a little while, some more live music in our studio from Carter Burwell and Maya Beiser. He's behind the scores to A Serious Man and Where the Wild Things Are. She's arranged Led Zeppelin for the cello. They'll play together. Stay tuned.
Check out today's Soundcheck blog.
In the case of Doris Day, I grew up knowing the name and somehow understood that the name signified something other than the person it belonged to, even though I had no idea who she actually was.
For the rest of the story, visit the Soundcheck page at WNYC.org.
Doris Day started out in jazz, but it was pop hits like this one from the Alfred Hitchcock thriller The Man Who Knew Too Much that made her a cultural icon. I'm John Schaefer. We're back on Soundcheck today talking about Doris Day with Nellie Mackay, whose latest CD is Normal as Blueberry Pie, a tribute to the singer and actress, and David Kaufman, the theater critic and author of the book Doris Day, The Untold Story of the Girl Next Door. Nellie, your album does not include Que Sera Sera. Why does Doris Day's biggest hit not make the cut?
Right. She did it so well, you know. And in fact, she did everything so well, and it was a real conundrum in approaching this album. You know, it might be a single for Japan.
the bonus track, yeah, or something like that. David, her career starts to decline in the 60s. Is that a function of her style of music going out of style? Were there other factors at work?
Well, certainly her singing recording career begins to decline before her film career. her last five or six movies, they continued to do quite well at the box office, but not with the critics, and they were not good films. For the most part, they're pretty schmaltzy.
Yeah.
And it's really because Melcher, once again, her husband and manager, he was living in the past. The 60s was a cultural revolution for all of us in every respect. And it's really unfortunate because I, you know, my primary motivation in devoting so much of my life to this book was because I came to feel, as I became more and more familiar with Doris's movies and her songs, that she was so underestimated by my generation when I was growing up and by everybody since then. And that's because I think so much of what she did was kind of schlocky and schmaltzy. But she herself was wonderful. She was such a naturally talented actress and singer. I don't know a musician who doesn't consider her to have one of the finest voices.
So it was a question of, I guess, questionable choices being made by her husband slash manager.
Completely. And in fact, the first person I interviewed for this book was Mitch Miller, who was her record producer at Columbia for 10 years during her heyday. And like many other singers, he subjected her to a lot of novelty songs. But
So he was your first interview. At some point, did you ever get close to an interview with Doris herself?
No. I mean, I did call a number of times, but I knew before I even started working on this book that even if I got to talk to her, she would not talk about the past. When she moved to Carmel, she really put it behind her, and she had to because it was such an unhappy life. One of the people I befriended is another terrific New York cabaret singer, Mary Clear Heron. She met Doris because she did the PBS documentary in the early 90s, and when Mary Clear went out to Carmel to interview Doris, she had her 2-year-old son with her. And when she started talking to Doris about her film career, she was asking her how happy she was as a movie star, such a major movie star. And Doris broke down. This isn't, of course, on the PBS documentary. And she said, "Mary, you just don't get it. The only thing I ever wanted was to be happily married and have a happy home life the way you do. And it's the one thing I never had."
Nellie, have you had a chance to speak to Doris Day?
I thought you were going to ask, do you have a happy home life?
Nellie, do you have a happy marriage and home life?
It's happening and growing. if I had a chance to speak to Doris Day, yeah, we did an interview for Bark magazine, and she was lovely. And you know, her dedication to the animals is just fantastic. And
so she was not talking about the past; she was talking about what she's currently her current obsession, really, which is animal rights.
We might have touched a bit on movies or singing, but it was mostly the focus was the animals. Yeah.
So is that did you know that part of her story when you first, you know, were getting into her singing and her music?
Well, I'd heard about it, you know, like Sandy Dennis or Dick Gregory or it's great, you know, these people you learn about that they support the same cause as you, and then you go out and see all their movies, and a lot of times they're really talented people. So I'd kind of known about that even before I got her autobiography and got into her music.
Mm-hmm. So it's an interest the two of you share.
Yeah.
David, where does that come from? I mean, you know, I don't want to put you on the psychoanalyst's couch or anything.
It's a little hard not to, but it really does go back to her youth, and it goes back to her having a pretty awful relationship with her father, who simply wasn't there for her. And she did have a little dog, and when Doris, she broke her leg, she was on crutches, she was out walking her dog named Tiny, and he got away from her, and she watched him being run over by a car. And
wow.
I think that was a major moment in her life, and she had a thing for animals her whole life, but it's something that she really begins to address in the mid-70s, which is when her career ends.
So around the time that the autobiography comes out.
Yeah, it's around that same time. It's a couple years before when she could begin to devote all of her attention to it, because After her husband manager died in 68, she was committed to a CBS TV series for 5 years. And once that ended in 73, she stopped working and
started devoting her time to something she really cared about,
exactly.
Namely animals. Nellie, the song you played for us in the first part of the show was your own song, sort of in tribute to Doris. The next song you're going to play for us is something she recorded herself, right?
Yes, Meditation. It's off her album Latin for Lovers.
Did she? She wouldn't have used a ukulele, though, would she? This is very much the Nellie Mackay touch.
I think that may be the private Doris, though. It seems like an instrument that would suit her. Yeah.
Let's hear another live performance in our studio. Nellie Mackay's latest album is called Normal as Blueberry Pie. It is a musical tribute to Doris Day. And here is a live performance of the song Meditation here in our soundcheck studio.
In my loneliness, when you're gone and I'm all by myself, and I need your caress, I just think of you, and the thought of you holding me near makes my loneliness soon disappear. Though you're far away, I have only to close my eyes, and you are back to stay. I just close my eyes, and the sadness that missing you brings soon is gone, and this heart of mine sings. Yes, I love you so, and that for me is all I need to know. Till the sun falls from out of the sky, for what else can I do? I will wait for you, meditating how sweet life will be when you come back to me.
That is Meditation, a song that Doris Day recorded, but which Nellie Mackay arranged and just played live for us here in our studio. There's so much more that could be said about Doris Day, but why don't we leave it there? What a great way to wrap up the segment. Nellie Mackay's latest album, Normal as Blueberry Pie, is a tribute to Doris Day. David Kaufman's book, Doris Day, The Untold Story of the Girl Next Door, is recently out in paperback. Nellie, David, fascinating stuff. Thanks for being with us on the show today.
Thank you. And I hope people go out and support the Animal League and Foundation. You know, it's not only pets anymore, dogs and cats, it's farm animals.
There is a link on the Soundcheck page of our website so folks can do just that. This is Soundcheck.
I've got my bag, got my reservation, spent each dime I could afford. I'm like a child in wild anticipation. I long to hear that all aboard.
Still to come, more music and film. Carter Burwell talks about his collaborations with the Coen brothers and Spike Jones and plays live with cellist Maya Beiser. Tomorrow on the show, jazz critic Gary Giddens explains how he tackled the epic history of the genre in a new book. Tomorrow on Soundcheck.
Of railroad track that takes me back. I never thought my heart could be so yearning. Now